Now, firstly, I thought maybe you could tell us about what it is that you do.
So I'm the director of the Centre for E-Research and Digital Innovation at Federation University Australia. And I suppose in my role as director, I have the opportunity to lead a pretty diverse team of researchers and technologists. And we get to work with some really interesting partners on some very varied and interesting projects.
So, what e-research and digital innovation, what does that mean?
So most of the projects that we're involved in involve technology, and I suppose e-research traditionally has been thought of in the context of modernising research practices enabled by technology. So in a university context in the past, a lot of the ways of getting your research out to others would be through publications and through conferences. I suppose e-research enables the knowledge to be disseminated in new ways. So in CERTI's context, often that's through bringing data together in spatial and knowledge management portals, so online gateways to information for different types of communities or industries or individuals.
And how important is it that this sort of access is fostered?
I think fostering that sharing of knowledge and the outcomes of research is very important. I think if you can explore what's already known in a much more accessible way, your starting point, whether it's for regional planning or industry development, is based on the most comprehensive, up-to-date, authoritative information that might exist about a particular topic or area.
So, the topic of this interview is data democracy, but before we talk about that, I'd like to get a handle on what it means when we say we're in the era of big data. What does that mean?
When we first started thinking about big data, I suppose we weren't thinking about big data in the way that it's often spoken about in the media, where you know, every transaction, everything I buy, all that information is collected. In our case, when we were thinking about big data originally, we were thinking about all of the information around, say, if it was the environment for the southwest region of Victoria, what information already exists that we can bring together. And then as we work with the community or with other organisations in the region for them to share what they know, that it would be a much more comprehensive insight into the knowledge that's already been confirmed in a particular place. So I suppose in a regional context, when you start to bring together all of these disparate data and information sources, whether they're documents, whether they're photos, whether they're information that might have been in spreadsheets or reports or whatever, once you start to bring all of that information together in a way that can be found and accessed and interrogated and reused, then I think you start to get to big data.
So, is it just hype, or are we actually in a new, different era?
Even in the last few years, the amount of devices, sensors, drones, the devices that can collect data continuously are being deployed in our communities to monitor things like groundwater or air quality. So yes, there is much more data being collected, but often that data isn't available for discovery, and so sometimes we're collecting data without putting it to use in terms of decision making.
So there's a lot being collected, but there's a blockage in it being used, or what's the problem?
I think it varies, the problem in terms of data being collected by devices and not necessarily being used. Sometimes it's a lack of knowledge, sometimes it's a lack of skills. sometimes it's just too hard. All the different devices don't speak to each other. So even if you wanted to bring it together in a way that might make sense for a particular purpose, it just might not be that easy.
So where does the concept of data democracy come into this?
Well, from a research perspective, I suppose we've often been interested in accessing data that government or other organisations hold. The first phase of research is often to understand what we already know about a particular subject matter area. So if we're looking at the health and wellbeing of a regional community, we might want to understand what the ABS statistics are for that region. We might want to look at some of Health and Human Services information. We might want to understand what some of the crime or other factors might be that are already known about the region. So in terms of data democracy, I suppose we're looking to be able to access that information without going through lots of roadblocks in terms of having to apply for access, having to wait a long time. So, you know, if data is available, if it can be found, if it can be delivered to other users in a way that makes it easy for them to build upon that with whatever other local information that they can marry up with it, then I suppose that's part of what we would see data democracy as being.
How do you define data democracy?
It's a good, you know, internationally and in Australia, data democracy has been linked to principles, the FAIR principles, you know, so findable, accessible, interoperable and reusable. So, you know, if data meets all of those parameters, then I think data democracy becomes much more possible.
So, and who, findable for whom? Who are we kind of trying to talk about when we talk about access and interoperability?
Mm. It's hard to say because we work across so many different areas where we're trying to help different types of research partners in finding the data and making it available in an ongoing way for whatever purpose that they want. So sometimes it's easier to use an example. So, you know, if I'm a landowner, you know, in an agricultural community, then I suppose if I want to understand what's the possibilities in terms of, you know, the best crops for my region, I might want to know things about the soil data, I might want to know things about the past climate and the predicted climate in the future, I might want to know things about groundwater. It's very hard to know what you want findable until you know what purpose you want to put it to. So we normally start with the questions that people want to answer or the problems that they want more insight on, and then that helps us to understand what data they'd use in their current practice to answer those questions. And if we can work with them to reduce some of the complexity or the time or other challenges that there might be with bringing all of that information together, then you can get to the point where you're asking those frequently asked questions much more easily. And as you go forward, it becomes possible to then think about more complex decisions that additional information might be able to help as well. So I think, it's no good just putting all sorts of data, unlocking all sorts of data without knowing why and for what purpose and for who. But if you answer some of those questions first, then it's much more likely that you will have people who will want to use that in their practices as they go forward.
So does that mean that the open data sort of principle is is part of this platform of sort of this data democracy idea, but it's they're not the same thing, is that?
Yeah, I suppose open data is something that if organisations are moving towards that, or individuals are moving towards sharing their data in open ways, that reduces some of the barriers to data democracy, but I think they are two different things, yes.
How does a project like Visualising Victoria's Groundwater illustrate some of these points that we've just been talking about? Can you give us a case study?
Okay. In the past, if I was a land contamination consultant and I needed to undertake an inspection of a site where there's been some contamination incident, the first thing I'd have to do would be to find out what did we already know about that area, its groundwater, whether there were past contamination events. To find all of that information when it was distributed across multiple custodians and different data sets in different formats, in different systems, the preparing stage before I even went out on site was a very long process. With Visualising Victoria's Groundwater, because we involved end users like land contamination consultants in the planning and in the co-creation of technology and tools, with a view to helping them to answer their frequently asked questions like what contamination has occurred at this site in the past, show me all the groundwater bores within a particular radius of the site that I'm interested in. What the research that has been conducted since the implementation of Visualising Victoria's Groundwater shows is that for that industry there's been very significant time savings and efficiencies, and they have less time that needs to be spent gathering the primary data to start their investigations, and we would hope therefore that there'd be more time available to complete that new work and to share the outcomes of that work as they submit their reports to the Environmental Protection Authority and other organisations.
So how does that link into this idea of data democracy, that project?
It's not just land contamination organisations or professionals that might have an interest in the state of the environment. So citizens, you know, someone who's buying land, there could be all sorts of other use cases. There may be innovative companies who want to come along and they might see what Visualising Victoria's Groundwater, but they may have ideas for extending what's possible through some new application or new intervention or invention. And if the data is already made available in ways that make it easy for them to access as well, then those new purposes are much more possible. So I think some of it is that if data is more openly available, then what's possible? Well, we can't even imagine some of that.
Yeah, so it's a new, your, yeah, that these kind of unforeseen, serendipitous discoveries or applications you can't even imagine at the moment.
Mm. I mean, last week I think Songways was launched as part of the Ballarat Historic Urban Landscape program, and Songways is looking at the musical history of Ballarat. You know, if I'm interested in music today, it's going to be an area where I'll want to delve into what do we already know, and those that past information is not necessarily data in the form that we think about data being generated from sensors. It's not ones and zeros. It's photos and old films and all sorts of you know, music tracks. So, yeah, I think making that type of information available is also very powerful in terms of connecting people to place. So, yeah, it can be quite personal.
What about something like the NRM planning portal? Because that involved a lot of communities in their personal places or local areas, didn't it? So maybe you could talk a bit about that one.
I think with the NRM planning portal, it's been really interesting to see how proud some of the land care groups and networks have been when they've been empowered with tools that enable them to demonstrate to others the breadth and variety of the work that they've undertaken over what's more than a 20-year period for some of those groups. So if I look at the Wodeyalik land care network, you know, we can see, they can show others, you know, whether it's been fencing or pest eradication or other types of land improvement, they can show the world, new members, exactly what they've done in the past, and they can demonstrate visually what their priorities are in terms of future land improvement work. So, and I think that's a really powerful motivator for groups like them. You know, in lots of areas, we look over the fence and we see how others like us are managing their communication, are sharing their insights. And I think the NRM planning portal has empowered small community groups to share what they know about the land that they're working to improve. I think the NRM planning portal has also provided a model that has attracted you know, national attention, in terms of we invest an enormous amount from a federal and a state government perspective into land improvement works, but sometimes the knowledge of what actually has been funded and how has that improved our waterways or our catchments is not that easy to measure. And so, you know, I think it provides an exemplar in terms of in the future, if we were to take a knowledge management approach in parallel with some of these practical on-ground works, then we will be able to demonstrate how government and community investment has enhanced our land values, our natural capital values.
And when you say knowledge management, what do you mean? What does that mean in an example like the NRM planning portal?
Well, if maybe I'll take the soil health knowledge base as an example of what knowledge management can be. So in that case, there are thousands of digital resources, grey literature, reports, just for a very small region of Victoria, you know, in the southwest of Victoria. There's hundreds of spatial layers, maps of the region. Without something like the soil health knowledge base, it would be nearly impossible for somebody to say, what do we already know about this region in terms of its soils? But once the work is undertaken to open up that information for others to access and use, then, you know, building upon that with new reports or new photographs or new resources becomes much more attractive and has much more impact, I think.
So again, it's this idea of what do we already know? There's so much more we can do to collate all of that information. I'm thinking now of the online farm trials project, how all of those test results were collated going back many years. So, yeah, maybe we could talk about online farm trials, because that's a really good example in different ways, isn't it?
Mm. I think what's powerful about online farm trials is that what's been undertaken by farming systems groups across Australia in terms of field-based research, there's now the opportunity to filter the results of that research to look at common factors. So, you know, in the wheat belt in Western Australia and the Wimmera Southern Mallee here in Victoria, there can be learnings for both regions if they can access the results of each other's past trial research. So We think that if you're planning to undertake field trial research, you know, one of the starting points that's emerging now is that we're seeing agronomists and researchers going to online farm trials, looking at what trials have already been done in this area, what were the methods and approaches that were undertaken. And so we think that it has the potential to enhance the quality of the research that's being undertaken in the future, as well as make sure that the results of past research are considered before investment in new research is commenced.
And is that a new thing, that suddenly Western Australia can see what the Wimmera is doing and vice versa? Or could they do that before?
The most common way that farming systems groups had been disseminating the results of their trial research were through annual publications, where the collection of trial reports for the research undertaken in the previous growing season was communicated. So if that information was available online, it was probably locked up in a PDF formats, rather than being able to be interrogated to find, show me all the trials like this particular one. So it is a new approach to making information available for discovery and use.
So if we're talking about those principles of data democracy, the FAIR principles that you talked about before, how does online farm trials illustrate those FAIR principles?
With online farm trials, there's lots of ways that you can get to the data that's now been unlocked. A farming systems group may have, through their own website, a gateway through to the online farm trials, starting with the trials that have been conducted in their own region. People can go directly to the online farm trial site, but it's also possible for the API and other ways to access the data that's been now collected together. So that means that there's much more opportunity for that field trial results to be an input into other types of systems and tools and technologies, and therefore for the evidence collected through past research to be an input into decision making in the future.
Sport and Recreation Spatial, which is the other project that we've got interviews and footage about, how would you see that illustrates this data democracy landscape?
I think with Sport and Recreation Spatial, it's been a really interesting project, because traditionally organisations like AFL, Netball, Cricket Australia, they wouldn't share their player data or their coaching data. I think for government, for VicHealth, for Sport and Recreation Victoria, for them to have effective policy, they need good information about who's playing and who's not playing. What Sport and Recreation Spatial has enabled is for a whole range of different use cases to be satisfied by that collaboration and that partnering on making data available. So for the sporting organisations, it's now much easier for them to see their participation data with government data. So if we're looking at, say, growth areas in Victoria, you know, where is the population growing? Where might we need to advocate for investment for new facilities? I think Sport and Recreation Spatial has proven itself as a great place for evidence-based planning in relation to some of those key things that sporting organisations want to achieve. But equally, by the sports collaborating on sharing their participation data, some of the policy questions that government has in terms of, who's playing sport, you know, when are people dropping out of sport, a whole range of questions around active participation, and whether organised sport is more effective than you know, non-team-based activities. There is a whole evidence base that it won't have all of the information to answer every question, but it makes a lot of that research much more efficient, much less costly, and more timely.
That's fascinating, and one of my questions is about what would you like to say to policymakers, so people who might be government custodians of data or who might be responsible for implementing sort of data use policies. What would you like to say to them about what you just would like them to think about?
So I think from a policymaker perspective, a key message would be open up your data. Open up your data, but in the most sophisticated way. So what we've observed when data.vic.gov and data.gov.au data gateways to government data, when those have been established, it's been more about the number of data sets that are being released, perhaps than the quality and the usefulness of that data. And if data sets are released in their raw formats, it's still very time consuming to be able to get that data in a format that provides insight. So I suppose while we think that the public access through data.gov and data.vic.gov gateways has been a fantastic initiative, as we move to the next generation of those initiatives, what we'd really like to see is the data that's being delivered through web services, through APIs, and other means that take the complexity out of reusing that data to a much larger extent.
So open your data, but think about quality, think about how people might use it.
Yes, yeah. I think if I'm a custodian of data in a public sector organisation, then I have a responsibility to make that the data that I'm a custodian for available in effective modern ways.
What about private custodians of data? What message would you like to send them?
Well, I think it's a learning curve. It's a learning curve to share data, whether you're a large organisation or a private company. So the CERTI approach has been partnerships, you know, long-term partnerships where we have to build understanding of what's possible, and we have to build that understanding of what's possible in a context where we know what our partners want to achieve. So I think a great example at the moment is working with Precision Agriculture, who are co-located with us at the Technology Park. And what's been really interesting in working with Precision Ag is we've been working with Precision Ag to help them to understand that a lot of the data that they're custodians for has public good benefits, as well as benefits in helping them provide the best advisory services to their farming clients. So farming clients aren't going to be wanting all of the information that their ag tech provider holds to be made publicly available. But there are lots of examples where there wouldn't be any concern with that data being shared if the understanding can be built of the benefits beyond their farm. So in some areas, if we want to demonstrate things like social license to operate, the provenance of the food that we produce, individual producers aren't going to be able to demonstrate those things on their own. So it's only if we work collectively to share information that we're going to be able to demonstrate those clean, green credentials that Australia has a very good standing in today.
talk then about what are the benefits? What are the benefits of this sort of collaborative approach to making data more available, more sophisticated, better quality? What, because obviously there's an investment that's required, isn't there? So so what's the case for it?
Yeah, so the case, I suppose, for being the place to go to for the best data, it depends who you're asking the question for. As the leader of a research centre at a university, we believe that if the organisations and the industries that we work with advance their practices in this area, then we'll have opportunities to collaborate with some of the best researchers in Australia and internationally, because we can help implement experimentation in new areas for data sharing or new disciplines. I think for those in industry and community, it's the evidence-based planning. If I'm working in the Wimmera and I'm in the health or the education or the community services sector, and I'm passionate about making our community a healthier and more vibrant community, a more sustainable community to live, when a lot of the power and decision-making responsibility is with the regional communities, well, wouldn't you want to make those future plans based on the best possible information and knowledge? And so in a way we see that this open data, data democracy means that if I'm invited onto a new committee and I want to learn everything that's the foundation knowledge for that group, then, you know, being able to access the best possible knowledge about those particular issues and my region is going to help me conduct my role in helping the community much more effectively.
Yeah, well, and presumably it's a similar benefit scenario for government as well.
Government are a significant custodian of knowledge, but that knowledge has been funded, you know, by the public purse. So I think they have a real opportunity with the technologies and capabilities that are now available to open up and make that knowledge much more readily accessible, to change practice, to inform industries, to grow investment. You know, if I look at all of the research that's been undertaken in agriculture, it's a real opportunity to unlock that research knowledge for the sector.
Are there any risks in opening up data?
In some ways, I think there's more risks in not sharing data than in sharing it, because a lot of the issues around security, around ensuring privacy, can be managed. And I suppose the approach that we take at CERTI is that we really empower the custodians to make the choice as to, they set the rules in terms of who is going to access their data and for what reason. So that helps to manage the risks of opening up data. So it's opening up data with some conditions in place.
So what's your grand vision? You know, where would you like us to be in 10 years?
Oh, in 10 years, I mean, I would hope we wouldn't be having some of these conversations, that it'd be almost, let me try again. In 10 years' time, I would hope that we would very easily be able to access and bring together data to tell a story about a place, to identify, you know, its opportunities. So I suppose if I'm looking that far down the track, I would have thought that public organisations, government organisations, semi-government organisations, research organisations, just as part of their business as usual practice, they would be making their data available via services or other smart ways that might emerge by that time. And anyone who wanted to use that data would be able to do so without barriers or costs or time constraints.
Do you think we'll get there?
In terms of whether we'll get there or not, I think it's the initiatives like the online farm trials, it's the initiatives like the NRM planning portal. I think once people see what's possible, then the push to adopt these new practices will become much stronger. And so I don't know whether we'll get there completely, but we're very committed to continuing to work in this area, where we work with public and private custodians of data to help them to understand what they need to do to progress their adoption and their practices in this area. And we're also committed to continuing the research that understands what impacts, benefits, changes occur when these approaches are adopted. So yes, it's an exciting area and one that we're really committed to.